Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And Sour Humanoid!
When I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested, and all thumbs up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. It's your girl, Tawny, joined by my fabulous bestie, McBesterson.
Lisa, what's up, McBesterson?
Yeah, that's a new one. I don't know where that came from. But so we have another bestie with us today. We're going to chat about nutrition and alcohol and that very, I think, underrepresented intersection. And Brooke, our one of my good friends, Brooke, she has a new book coming out that we're going to talk all about. So, I'm just going to read her bio and I'll probably ad lib because I know her too well. Okay. Dr. Brooke Scheller, the creator of Functional Sobriety and New York City's top nutritionist specializing in alcohol use. Her new book, How to Eat to Change How You Drink, is a guide to leverage food and nutrition to reduce or eliminate alcohol consumption, develop mindfulness, and promote a healthier relationship with alcohol. But something that is not in her bio is that I've nicknamed her Doc Brock because she's obsessed with broccoli. And I don't know how this came up.
I'm going to tell you the story of how it came up. So I love that you call me Doc Brock.
Yeah, Nick and I, when we don't even say Brooke, it's just, hey, is Doc Brock coming over later? Yep, Doc Brock. So Doc Brock.
Listen, that'll probably catch on now, really, since you're sharing this more openly with other people. I'm so happy to be here. And I will tell you the story behind Doc Brock, which is I do love broccoli, but broccoli is like a very polarizing vegetable. Like people either love broccoli or hate broccoli, which I definitely identify with. But the real reason was the story that I told you, Tawny, which is that my name is Brooke Lee. My middle name is Lee. So my name is basically Broccoli. So I'm basically Dr. Broccoli. So Tawny then lovingly shortened it to Doc Brock. So that works too. Dr. Brooke, Doc Brock, whichever works.
I love it. And when you get married, you're going to have a bouquet of broccoli going when you're
walking
down the aisle.
That is my plan. Yeah. I'm still hiring for the role of husband or partner. But yeah, the broccoli has already been decided. That part is the more important part.
You've got the bouquet figured out. So everything else will just fall into place.
Fall into place.
So I want to hear about the book. I've read the book already, and it is a much needed discussion on the intersection of alcohol and nutrition and sobriety, nutrition, sober curiosity, nutrition, all of that. And I know, because I know you, I know that you are passionate about this intersection. It's your career, of course, but it's also underrepresented. There's a significant amount of discussion on mental health in recovery, which is obviously super important, but there's just not enough conversation about the physical health, but more specifically nutrition and how that contributes to mental and physical health in someone's recovery journey. So Brooke, if you could tell us more about that and why this book, why now?
Yeah, well, thanks again both for having me on the podcast. I'm so excited to be here and I love your podcast. I love the rock part. I'm a rock girl myself. my friends when I was growing up. And I even talk about this in the book that I had this super emo phase and my friends all called me Punk Rock Brooke. Apparently people love to make nicknames for me, which I'm learning. so I'm learning that right now on the podcast. But yeah, so it's very interesting when I think back in the evolution of my life and how this all came to be, because writing a book has been something that has been a goal of mine for a long time. Like, I think many authors grow up wanting to write a book someday, right? And I always wanted to write a book. I had no idea what I was going to write a book about. No idea that I was going to eventually, you know, stumble into this sobriety recovery space. And my training, as you mentioned, Tawny, is all in nutrition. I have a bachelor's, a master's, and a doctorate in nutrition. So something was going on there that I had an interest. And all during this time, by the way, through all of these degree programs, I am a heavy drinker. And I was a heavy drinker from my teenage days. You know, I started drinking at age 13. I had some heavy trauma in my late teen years that I think exacerbated my drinking. And I never really, you know, as a healthcare practitioner, I didn't really talk about alcohol with clients, not to any extensive level. I wasn't trained in any way to do so. I had never, you know, understood the real impact that alcohol was having on my body. And I think a big part of that is, and what I think happens with most healthcare practitioners is we don't, it's not really something that comes to the forefront. It's not something that people are always willing to talk about in their appointments with their healthcare practitioners. And I really believe from a healthcare practitioner's standpoint that there's kind of, and I posted about this not long ago on Instagram, there's kind of probably one of two reasons why a practitioner might not bring up alcohol in a healthcare appointment. One is that maybe they just truly don't know that much about how prevalent alcohol use disorders are or how often people are drinking. Maybe they're not drinkers themselves. Or they might be someone who also has an uncomfortable or an unhealthy relationship with alcohol and they're not willing to address that. They don't want to bring it up in the appointment. The statistics are actually very high in healthcare, especially amongst doctors, in alcohol use, right? High stress job, high stress lifestyle, also financially, you know, successful lifestyle where you can purchase, you know, fancy drinks and it's part of the lifestyle and all of these things. And so, ironically, prior to getting sober, I wrote a chapter in a textbook on integrative approaches to substance use disorders, on nutrition and supplements for substance use disorders. And I wrote this during kind of my final year of drinking. My drinking was pretty heavy. And it wasn't even something that initially I had a whole lot of an impact on me. I kind of felt like, you know, I had been given this opportunity. I had never authored anything that had been in print. And ironically, the same month I got sober was the month that textbook published, June of 2021. And when I decided to quit drinking, when I hit my point of, okay, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm going to get sober, the first tools that I used were tools of supplements and nutrition, because that was what I knew. That was my background. And so I was utilizing supplements that I often share about, things like L-glutamine, which we can talk more about supplements later on, that are really beneficial for eliminating cravings for alcohol. And I remember one particular time in my first couple of days of sobriety where I was ready to go get a drink. And what I did instead was I took this supplement and it kept me from taking a drink. And these are the tools that eventually made their way into the book. But it wasn't until I was about 3 months sober, the fog kind of lifted finally from my brain. And I was like, I had started following sober influencers on Instagram. I started getting more involved in the community. And I realized no one was talking about nutrition as part of it. And historically, there's actually a lot of information on nutrition for recovery, but more framed in a sense of if you're in a rehab program or if you are maybe identifying as an alcoholic and you're seeking out these types of tools, it's not looked at there were two opportunities that I saw. Is one is in this new era of sober, sober curious, where you don't have to have an alcohol use disorder or identify yourself as an addict to decide that you're going to quit, but also this huge, huge push toward the functional medicine and the holistic medicine era of where we're looking at the gut microbiome and things like hormones and cortisol and all of these other ways that alcohol actually affects these areas massively. Mm. And so all of that kind of came together in the book, and it's really been a passion project for me and just such like an amazing way for me to bring my two like areas of experience together.
It's such a fascinating intersection, and it's wild that it hasn't been discussed before in this way, in this context, especially in a book. Or, you know, you give a lot of really great information on social media, like educating people about these, about supplements or about vitamins and nutrients and foods that we need. So I'm wondering if you could give listeners maybe a few nuggets of like, mm-hmm. like what's the L-glutamine? Is that what you just said? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you get that in food, or is that's only in supplement form?
Yeah. So let me give you like a couple of my top recommendations, because I cover a lot of different areas in the book, and Tawny has read it. Lisa, I believe you've seen it, read it. But there's a kind of introductory section in the beginning that gives a more high level overview. The second part really dives into the science. So I talk about these three different core areas. One of them is the gut microbiome. The second is blood sugar and hormones and what we call the endocrine system, which is the larger kind of hormonal system of the body. And then we talk about the brain. And we talk about that from a perspective of nutrient deficiencies, how things like proteins and amino acids affect the brain. And then the third section of the book is your action piece. So it's giving you a guide to implementing nutrition as a tool. It is giving you supplement recommendations, herbal recommendations, lifestyle modifications. And then there's also a massive recipe section in the back, which surprises a lot of people because it says nothing about recipes until you get in there, which I think was maybe an opportunity. it's a little bonus that you get. Recipes.
I knew you and I didn't even know. I was like, oh my God, there's recipes. This is great. I made your beets the other day. It's like, I made Doc Brock's beets.
Yes. Listen, beets are one of my favorite. Okay, so we're talking nuggets. Beets, really, really great for supporting the liver, really rich in B vitamins, which we deplete out pretty significantly when we are drinking heavily. The other thing I love about beets is that they help with oxygenation and blood flow through the body. So they actually help with blood flow to the brain. So they're great for boosting focus, mental clarity, productivity, things along those lines. So I usually recommend beets for breakfast, which throw a lot of people off, but I have a beet smoothie recipe in the book that is the bomb. It is my favorite. It's a beet chocolate cherry smoothie. And it's delicious. Oh, it's a great way to get beets in the morning. I love it. And so beets and then broccoli. So we talked a little bit about broccoli because that's my shtick. But broccoli and broccoli's cousins, things like cauliflower, cabbage, kale, Brussels sprouts, anything in that what we call cruciferous vegetable family, they're also really good for the liver, for helping to produce antioxidants, which are really, really key if we are drinking, have drank. Most of us have this kind of dysfunction in the liver and digestive system that can really benefit from things like these cruciferous vegetables. But in addition to that, one of the other big recommendations that I give, and Tawny knows this about me because I talk about this a lot, but part of the reason why I do is because it's so impactful for people. And one of the big things that is missing more in this conversation around alcohol use, and especially cravings and early alcohol elimination, is blood sugar. And our blood sugar is heavily affected by regular alcohol use, so much so that the majority of people, there's actually a statistic, it's It's an older statistic. It's something from the late 90s. So I think there's a lot of research to be done in this area. There's definitely more. But the statistic that I share in my book from another author is that 95% of people with an alcohol use history have blood sugar irregularities, which means that most, if not all, people who have an alcohol use, a drinking history, are going to experience these irregularities in blood sugar. What that means is that we have a tendency toward hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. Low blood sugar, to kind of simplify it for you, is when we get that hangry feeling, right? We're really hungry. We need sugar or some type of carbohydrate to give us energy. And when we don't have that, we are ready to bite someone's head off or chew our own arm off, or we're angry, we're, you know, like we need food, right? There's those memes about how girls need to be fed because otherwise they get really hangry. Well, that happens more often with people who have a drinking history.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And what else is being marketed to the Snickers people is Bud Light. So it's like Bud Light. Okay. Now you have hypoglycemia and you need a Snickers, right? So, but that's a great example, right? Yeah. A Snickers is the worst thing to have when you have low blood sugar, because what it's actually doing is it's going to give you a quick boost of sugar and glucose in your body, which is followed off by a steep drop. Right? And it brings us right back down into that low blood sugar. So anytime we're in a state of low blood sugar, we have our body has a need to get back into a state of regulation. So when we're in that hangry state, when you're hangry, right? You don't care what you're eating. You need something quick, right? You need something quick. You need something to get your energy back up. A Snickers bar, right, would do that. It doesn't sustain you for a long period of time. But this is something that happens very regularly in people with an alcohol use history. So my biggest recommendation, the number one thing that you can do, especially if you're someone who is experiencing cravings for alcohol, but also sugar, right? This is the same mechanism that affects sugar cravings too, is protein. I want you to focus on protein at every single meal and every single snack. You should not be having a source of carbohydrates, sweets, or anything like that without protein as part of it. And I usually suggest at least 15 grams plus for a snack and at least 25 grams plus for a meal. And that is really truly going to help with balancing the cravings, especially in early sobriety. So I love that tool because it's really simple. And listen, we're all eating every day, somewhere around 3 meals a day, right? So these are tools that you're already eating. So just by kind of tweaking what it is that you're eating, it can have a really big impact.
Thank you for all of that. This is so great. As someone who's, we talk a lot about mental health, obviously. So I'm curious about, you know, we're talking a lot here about physical health and nutrition, and I'm wondering how can our nutrition, or even just making a couple tweaks to our diet, how can that improve our mental health as well as physical health?
Yeah. So one thing that most people don't understand is that nutrition and food, what we eat, has a direct impact on our mental health, point blank. Like no question about, right? And I'll give you an example in that. Have you ever gone a long period of time without eating and you get anxious, right? You're hangry, right? That's a short-term kind of more obvious way that nutrition or food affects our mental health. But there's huge tie-ins and a lot of ways to look at this, but I'll simplify and kind of talk about two different areas. The first thing I'll talk about is nutrients and vitamins and minerals. Most people don't recognize that things like RB vitamins, magnesium, zinc, iron, sometimes we hear these things and we hear like, oh, zinc is good for my immune system, right? Well, zinc plays a critical role in the conversion and the production of things like dopamine in our brain. The B vitamins, B6, B12, folate, these are all critical nutrients for the production of our brain's neurotransmitters. serotonin, dopamine, so our feel-good neurotransmitters, GABA, which helps us with relaxation. If we are not getting enough of these nutrients, we are likely going to experience irregularities with mood. Other nutrients that have been pretty well studied around mood and things like depression are vitamin D. Vitamin D is one that's pretty closely linked to deficiencies associated with depression. Now, here's the other really interesting thing is that what happens when we drink alcohol? Well, we deplete out all of these nutrients because our body, whenever alcohol is present, especially in high levels, our body has an increased need for nutrients that these nutrients also help to get rid of toxins and they help to get rid of free radical damage, which occurs when we drink alcohol because it's a toxin, right? So what ends up happening is we drink, we deplete out these nutrients, we end up with low mood or anxiety. And what do? We drink, we further deplete these nutrients. Mm. So it creates this kind of vicious cycle. And that's where nutrition, specific foods or supplementation can be really beneficial in kind of throwing a wrench in that cycle so that you're not kind of caught in that anxiety, low mood, depression cycle that's causing you to drink. The other thing I want to point out, and I won't dive too deep into this unless you feel like it's necessary, but the gut and the gut microbiome also play a really critical role in the production of things like serotonin and dopamine. And so this is another really interesting area for more research, especially around alcohol, because what we do know and what the science does show is that alcohol has a significant impact on the gut microbiome and the balance of the good and bad bacteria in the gut. So those kind of two areas are two for me that really stand out as it relates to mental health. So massive, right? If you're someone who experiences anxiety or depression, any type of mood dysregulation, nutrition will have an impact, period.
That's all just so powerful. I wish, you know, I'm hoping to celebrate 20 years sober in April. Thank you. Amazing. And For so many years, I didn't pay attention to, you know, that kind of nutrition piece of it. In fact, I went in the other direction. I was like, okay, I'm not drinking. Give me the pizza. I'm eating all the desserts. I'm doing all of those things. And I ended up with like, you know, I don't remember how many years into it I was, but I was just constantly like feeling bloated. I wasn't, you know, and it's like I eat healthy generally, but there was enough of, you know, of sugar and whatever. That was my treat all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I went to a sober nutritionist friend of mine, she really helped me with all that stuff. And protein was the biggest thing. So like I used to carry, I get hangry. It's like a thing. My husband refers to it as I'm having meltdowns when I get too hungry and I'm out. And it used to be that I would always have, so he, you know, initiated my practice that I needed to carry in my bag, like a little bag of pretzels. Mm-hmm. And I would do that. But I found after I started with the nutritionist and started putting in a protein bar instead, like how much better that switch was in terms of feeling full, in terms of it lasting longer. And now, I mean, she recommended RX bars because, you know, they're pretty straightforward and I love those. But I always have one in my bag. Tawny knows we were in LA. I'm like, here, have a protein bar. Mm-hmm. And I really was surprised, like everything sort of got better when I cut out certain things and not entirely. Like I still will love a piece of cake or whatever it is that I eat. I will love it. But like, I feel after I eat a piece of cake, I will feel that crash. Whereas I never noticed it before, but now I actually feel it because I'm not doing it to myself all the time.
Yeah. And being prepared, like you said, Lisa, is so important because it's too late when we're in that space, right? Like when we're in that meltdown, we want to avoid getting there, right? Because when we're there, we have a lot less control over what we choose to eat, right? Like when you're in that low blood sugar state, I'm pausing because what I want to pivot to talk about is willpower, right? Like how often have you heard when it comes to not only food, but also alcohol, people saying things like, well, I just don't have the willpower to say no. Like I, you know, I've tried and I really struggle to say no, I just don't have the willpower. Well, when you're in a state of low blood sugar, that has nothing to do with you and your ability to choose yes or no. That has to do with your body being in survival mode, right? Mm. So I point that out because if you're someone who has ever felt like you've struggled with willpower or you've really struggled with cravings, all that tells me is that there's opportunity there to improve what you're eating. So like Lisa said, if you have a protein bar in your bag and you can have that, I recommend always across the board, no longer than 3 to 4 hours between meals. Because if you go any longer than that, you're starting to head into the danger zone, especially if you didn't have a whole lot of protein prior to that. And like most people, right, have their hardest time with saying no to alcohol at 5 o'clock or, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, right? Well, what was the last thing you ate? I ask most people, it's usually lunch. Well, what was lunch? It was a sandwich or something high in carbs, right? Or maybe it was I was racing off, so I just grabbed, you know, something quick, an oatmeal or whatever. Well, you're also putting yourself into a risky position at that time of day, period, if you're not having a snack. So this is another one of my core recommendations beside protein, the 3 to 4 hours, always, always, always an afternoon snack, high in protein, because that is really going to help you overcome the afternoon kind of witching hour. So if you are someone who's struggled with willpower in the afternoon, put in a snack. And I have seen, I work with hundreds of clients around the world. I have an online group. I work one-on-one with clients. And across the board, protein in the afternoon has saved some people in terms of getting through these really difficult times in the beginning. So simple recommendations. Again, it's not like you have to go to these extremes. You don't have to buy any special product. You don't have to do anything crazy. It's just making small tweaks to your daily diet.
And that feels more approachable too, because, you know, people are reevaluating their relationship with alcohol, and that's already huge. Like that's a really, really big thing to do. So asking, you know, I'm trying to think of like when I was newly sober, the thought of reevaluating my relationship with food on top of the alcohol thing was like too much. like Lisa said, I didn't have whiskey today. I'm having a piece of cake. You know, exactly. So it's like, so I guess my question is like, what is that sweet spot? LOL. What's the best thing to do when you are newly sober and you do have a craving and you do want to, you know, maybe reward yourself with a piece of cake or something.
Or you just feel like a piece of cake. Like I love cake.
Yeah, I eat a lot of sugar.
I am a huge proponent of sweets, and I will tell everyone, it says it in the book. There's a part that says, you can go grab some ice cream. I'll wait, because you want to know what? In my early days of recovery, I probably hadn't had ice cream on a cone in 10 years. And then all of a sudden, it had to be on a cone. Like it was something about the holding it, like replacing the holding a drink kind of thing. And I was eating a ton of ice cream in the beginning, but only on cones, like didn't want it in a cup, not interested. And it's really strange. But here's the big thing. Like I'm a huge proponent that you should not also be trying to completely eliminate sugar at this time, because there is a huge connection here with blood sugar. Like if you are trying to also cut out sugar in early sobriety, it's going to make it a lot harder. But here's the thing. I always recommend if you are going to have some sugar, you just want to pair it either with protein or have it directly after a meal. So for example, you shouldn't be having, you know, you had lunch at noon and now it's 5 o'clock and you're having an ice cream cone by itself. Well, that's going to set you up for a little bit of trouble later in the day if you're not having that with a meal or with protein. So instead, what I would say is if you're craving a sweet in the afternoon, have an afternoon snack, have a protein bar, have a protein shake, have, you know, I love to do like turkey roll-ups, some deli turkey and cheese or avocado, something like that, and then add a sweet with it. Or have your sweet after dinner, directly after dinner, so that you're not having it on its own, because that's going to put you into that low blood sugar state, which is going to put you into a little bit of hot water. And I'm exactly with you, Tawny. Like, this is, it's a really difficult time, period. It's not about going like gung ho. I'm very against, you know, keto diets and intermittent fasting and all of this other stuff that, you know, we have a tendency to be interested in doing it all at once. And, but the reality is that those things can also, like intermittent fasting, for example, and I talk about it in the book, I don't recommend in early sobriety because of the blood sugar piece. And especially in women, when there's hormonal fluctuations and just kind of more tendency towards stress or high cortisol levels, that can have a really big impact on alcohol cravings later in the day. And so it's really important to keep it to the basics, keep it simple. And again, just tweaking what you're already doing, because ideally you're already eating, right? So if we can just make tweaks to what it is that you're eating and not make it this big, massive lifestyle change on top of it, and using it almost as like a complementary tool instead of something that's like just as hardcore gung-ho.
I love that so much. That's so great. It is like, it can be really a support tool instead of like, you know, a thing you have to do on its own.
Yeah, there's this, you know, we'll transition to music here in a minute, but I just wanted to say, like, I'm glad that you reiterated the importance of, you know, don't go gung-ho and quit everything at once. There's, you know, I used to do that. Like, I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to quit smoking cigarettes. I'm going to quit doing, like, I tried to quit everything at once and it never worked. It never works. There's a reason we say one day at a time, right? I mean, life is hard. Focus on staying away from alcohol and everything else, can fall into place. Let's talk about music.
You are on Recovery Rocks.
Yes.
Let's do it. So fun fact about me is I was a music major before I was a nutrition major. So.
Oh.
Wow.
Yes. Somehow that didn't work out. And I mean, I guess it all worked out in the end. Yeah. But I went to audio recording school when I was in high school and my first year of college. And I was a music major. I was going to do a 4-year audio recording school after that. And then I switched to nutrition. So I was a big music junkie back in my day, back in my punk rock Brook days. And music's always been an important part of my life.
Well, I want to know more about punk rock Brooke.
She had jet black hair. Oh, yeah. We'll have to whip out some old pics at some point.
Yes.
I'll have to dig into finding some. Yeah, there was one point I had like a blonde streak in the front. Like, yeah, really emo back in those days.
Were you going to shows?
Tons of shows.
Yeah.
Tons of shows. Yeah. I mean, most people know I have a lot of tattoos. Most of my tattoos are from that era. Like, I don't get too many tattoos nowadays, but yeah, I like on my 18th birthday at 2:00 got a tattoo. It was part of my punk rock vibe. Mm-hmm.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I would have never guessed it. That's always when it's.
Well, now I'm blonde and wear long sleeves most of the time. So,
well, it's funny because like I feel like I knew you for a little bit and then I saw you have sleeves and I was like, ooh, she's got a story. She has a past. Like she's blonde and she wears long sleeves, but she's got some tattoos on her fingers. I could see some tattoos poking out of those sleeves. Yeah. So, what shows were you going to?
So I was like a big emo alt rock girl. Big fan of like the emo era and, you know, like the real soulful stuff. So I'll start by telling you, like, if you had to ask me who's my favorite musician of all time, It's Jewel. Mm. Wow. I grew up learning how to play guitar to finger picking Jewel songs like in fifth grade. And I look back at this now and she's like a leader in like the mindfulness and spirituality space too. And I look back and I realize how I can't tell if her music influenced my spirituality and how emotional I am as a person. I can't tell if she influenced it or if I always, as a child, was a very like emotional person. And I just really deeply connected to her music and still do today. And I look back at it now and I'm like, I really like, even from a very young child, I was very sensitive. And Jewel has a song called I'm Sensitive. And so I've always been like, aside from the alt emo stuff, big into like acoustic kind of folksy stuff. And so I think it was like a natural progression into emo music because I love like that when music like speaks to your soul and like, oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Angsty.
Yeah.
We get it. We totally get
Me
it.
Too. We do.
Did you listen to anything while you were writing the book or any, did you have like, I have
or when
like
you got
get-
sober?
Yeah.
You know, when I got sober, I think I still lean in a lot to this acoustic folksy stuff. What I do know and what I'm learning about music and its association now with my emotions is that I have to be really careful because I do really love this emo music, but I also know that it can have a really big effect on my mood.
Yeah.
And so one thing I've learned in sobriety about music is that if I'm kind of on the verge of that more sensitive or emotional place, music can either like be really cathartic and help me kind of like lean into that, but it can also like be a place for me to self-sabotage a little bit. And so I'm finding this like really interesting connection with music in sobriety in a way that it's like when to use it to like for my benefit rather than like the sabotage piece, if that helps.
I love that's so healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really, really trying to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that. Like, I know, like, there are certain songs that I can really go deep with, like, you know, Garbage, I'm Only Happy When It Rains. Like, I can really use that to take me deep into that feeling. And, like, I know I'm in a better place mentally when I can hear that song and it doesn't pull me into that. And if I hear it, chances are I came to the song, you know, not in a great place. And then I use it to go deeper. So
and exactly like you
that.
Said, you don't seek that kind of music out. Like, I know I don't seek that kind of music out when I'm like in a great mindset. Like, I'm not like, oh, I love this song when I'm like feeling really good. It's like, I have a lot going on. I'm feeling really emotional. And I'm like, give me something that's going to like make me feel it even more. So it's kind of like, you know, it's an interesting kind of like boundary thing to learn in sobriety. But here's the thing that I'll say about that is like, this is what sobriety is all about. It's about learning and growing and like how to overcome emotions and like learn how to manage them. Like, I am someone who has my entire life, even until this year, I think 2023, I've never been able to manage my emotions. I've been very emotionally erratic. I'm not logical. I'm very emotionally driven when it comes to making decisions. But through my sobriety journey, I'm really learning how to change that and how to like master that and use my emotional piece for my growth and my creativity and those types of things, but not let it so much direct my life, my relationships, my friendships, etc.
Good for you, girl. Doc Brock, thank you for hanging
out
with us.
Thank you
for having me.
This was so great. Hopefully Jewel listens to this podcast and buys your book and then reaches out to you.
So I'm going to tell you,
everybody where to find you.
A quick fun thing before I tell everyone where to find me. Well, two quick fun things. One is that Jewel's jewelry line follows me on Instagram now. So ooh. I like to hope and pray that she is watching out there somewhere. Jewel, I love you. Also, last thing I'll say quickly is that during the pandemic, Jewel did this meditation workshop through the New York Times, and I got to ask a question, and she ooh. Answered my question live on the call. So love, 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 nice. Jewel. You can find me mostly, I'm active on Instagram at Dr. Brooke Scheller, Dr. Brooke Scheller. You can also head over to my website, Functional Sobriety, which is where you can find out more about my online program, my online course, my book, and my supplements, which we didn't even talk much about today, too. Yeah. And please, please check out How to Eat to Change How You Drink, available wherever books are sold. And I can't wait for you to read it. Thank you both for having me. I'm so excited for everyone to listen. And I hope that something resonated with you today.
Thank you so much, Brooke.
Thank you, Brooke. And there is an audiobook component if you're listening and you really liked Brooke's voice. Check out the audiobook. Brooke, thank you for joining us. And thank you all for listening. Have a good rest of your week.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.